book, session number 12893, Reel 2.
Air Vice Marshal UB Reel 2. So you were saying that you managed to get this job taking over the bomber transport flight at Koh Hao.
Oh, yes.
It seems from your logbook to be just before the war started, in about 38 or 39.
Yes.
Why did you say it was such a stroke of luck getting that job?
Well, by God, not dodging away from an adjutant's job into a flying job. That was all behind my intention.
Did the outbreak of war make much difference to you in India?
Did it have much effect? Well, it did, really, in that there was a move afoot to try and modernise the aircraft fleet there, you see. And the aim was, the initial aim, was to retrain the pilots on a modern aeroplane. Well, they decided that the Blenheim was to be the choice. Well, although I hadn't flown the Blenheim at Farnborough, I did fly the prototype, that lovely little aeroplane called the... It was a Rothermere. He ordered it, and Bristol made it, and it was like a miniature Blenheim. Same sort of shape, same idea, same profile, and rather pleasant to fly. We were using in those days at Farnborough for homing on a station and doing blind landings virtually, and we were using a Ford aeroplane, four engines it had, completely underpowered, and thought we'd have to have something else to do this bloody job. And they decided that it should be a Blenheim. And this so-called prototype was the beginning, you see. Well, I'm now back in India, and they'd got a Blenheim on order that was being assembled in Iraq. At Habaniya, the new airfield. And so would I go? I said, bloody right I would, I'd love it. So I went, I had a warrant officer engineer, Blake his name was, and a wireless operator. And away we went. I don't know how we went up the Gulf. We didn't fly. We went up by boat up to Basra from Karachi, and then by train up to... we went to Baghdad and then overland to Habaniya. That was all right because my old squadron was there, 70 squadron. I was with my earlier tour. And they were flying Blenheims. So I borrowed one of those and did a couple of circuits. And then the one for India was delivered. Well, it was assembled there. And so we planned our return. Eventually took off. very heavily laden, because I just took as many spares as I could, only one aeroplane out there. And we got about 30 miles on the way down to Basra and the starboard engine started to shake. And so I said to Mr. Blake, he was getting a bit worried about this bloody engine. I said, look, this is no good, we can't go on. We've got to take this airplane back and see what this is. So I was a bit worried about the landing weight, because it was almost too heavy to take off originally. And I'd only been in the air, what, half an hour or so. Well, I made a very gentle protest. This thing, and wheeled it onto the ground. I mean, perfectly all right. Taxied in and found that all that had happened was that one sparking plug had jumped out or loosened itself out. And that was all the trouble was. Had another set of plugs, well, a complete set of plugs, because the Iraq command were very embarrassed about this, you see. They put a new set of plugs in, and I think we went off the next day and got back into India. And that started what, for to me, was quite an experience. I had to go back to Ambala, land in Ambala, where 60 Squadron had already moved in. And then the plan was that I would send these fellas solo on this single Blenheim, and they would then go over to Egypt, where the Blenheims were being assembled at Abukir. And that was done. Our squadron went there and brought back, oh, I don't know, about 8 or 10 Blenheims, all quite successfully. And in the meantime, Ambala had been, let's see it, promoted from being an ordinary Air Force station to an advanced flying station. And I was the wing commander, station commander, and CO of the Air Force station, the advanced flying station. Well, that was fun. I had 60 Squadron, which is my old squadron. They were the first lot. And with their Blenheims, they went off. Then 39 Squadron from Rizalpur, and then 11 Squadron, three squadrons, all passed through Ambala and went down and re-equipped themselves, went over to Egypt and re-equipped themselves.
What rank did you hold at this time?
I think I was probably an acting wing commander. Well, when this Blenheim conversion of these three squadrons was completed, I was virtually redundant, because I'd had to hand over 60 Squadron to another chap. And so I was posted home. And I came back. And I was posted back to Farnborough. That suited me too. I was quite fit. I had no problems about health. And I went to Farnborough. And then there was a move afoot to move the Empire Test Pilot School down from, oh dear, what's the station near Bedford.
Thamesford?
No. No, it's now... It's got another funny name, the College of Aeronautics or something.
Never mind. It was called the Empire...
No. No, the Empire Test Pilot School was there.
Yes.
And I was posted as the commandant, but with the responsibility of moving it from this place down to Farnborough, where they'd taken over the RAF School of Photography, which was there, as a headquarters for ETPS. Well, that went fairly all right. But at that stage, NATO crept in on a security basis, because we were having students from all over the place, whether in NATO or not, or whether they were anywhere at all. We had one or two Chinese, bloody good fellows. And it altered the character of the place, really. We didn't have that international flavor, which was so welcome. But we did have modern aeroplanes. When I say modern, we were in the jet era then, you see.
Did any well-known test pilots pass through your hands at the school?
No, Jim Pegg was there, and because he was involved in the Concorde down at Bristol. And I enjoyed it.
What other problems did you have of running that test pilot school?
Well, no problems really, because I'd been involved with the scientists that we wanted there. And that was quite smooth, because they were all employed at Farnborough. And as far as flying was concerned, I enjoyed it, because we had quite a variety of aeroplanes. And I found that flying a jet with one eye was so much simpler. When I went back that time to Farnborough, I found a Spitfire Mark 12 that had completed its work there and was going to be given to the contractors to break up. So I took that on as my flagship and flew it around. But 8 feet of engine and a bloody great air screw, and one eye which committed me to look out to the left all the time, it got a bit unpleasant, but I enjoyed it. But when I got hold of a Meteor or a Vampire, it was so different. Lovely view in the front that I could see for miles.
How did you lose your left or your right?
Oh, that was in a crash at takeoff in a Hudson. The trim ran away, and it was all right when the initial takeoff, but when the undercarriage came off, there was a hell of a nose down trim which I couldn't control. I didn't throttle back, because she'd have gone straight back in the ground. And I held her off until I got past the runway. Unfortunately, there was a fairly nice open space, so I let her go and slide down onto the ground. And I was a fairly tight fit in a Hudson cockpit. And the deceleration, I was tightly strapped in. This deceleration just knocked me forward and far enough for me to hit my right eye out on the compass bracket, which was only a little way away, you see. And that was that.
Where was this?
That was at Sherburn in Elmet, in Yorkshire. No.
Yes, it's in Yorkshire.
Lincolnshire. Is it in Yorkshire?
It's in Yorkshire. Which year was that? Was it pre-war or during the war?
Oh, no, it was during the war. Because it altered my career, you see. They wouldn't... didn't alter my career. I kept flying.
But did that mean they wouldn't let you on to operations?
That's right, yes.
I've just been going through your logbook, mm-hmm. and I discover that you were posted to the Empire Test Pilot School, mm-hmm. a commandant post, at RAF South Cranfield in February 47,
yeah.
after the war had finished, of course.
Mm.
I've discovered that you were posted to command the Airborne Forces Experimental Establishment at Sherborne in Elmet on the 11th of March 1943, and that your crash that you described was the 12th of August 1943.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also discovered that you were station commander at Ambala and commanding officer of the Advanced Flying School at Ambala from December 39 to February 41. So that puts some precision to it.
It does, yes, good.